Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
We're back again. Another week, more games played.
Well, kinda. So what we're playing week, isn't it?
Yeah, this is what we're playing week.
I should probably
should have clarified that before I hit record.
Yeah, good. I can do this. I'm all about the improv, me. Yes, well, mostly this week I have been playing Guild Wars quite extensively. Guild Wars and Guild Wars 2. It's been a Guild Wars overload type thing, and also quite a lot of regrowth as well, the Minecraft server we're doing.
But we don't talk about that.
Well, it's been a lot of extracurricular stuff, which I expect I shall recap during the regrowth episodes themselves.
Episode 76 will be that one.
Blimey, we've really been going quite a long time on that.
We have.
I know.
We're getting there.
I get quite proud, actually. I get a warm glow looking around at everything we've achieved in there. It's quite extensive. I was talking to you the other day about the possibility of making our save game available for download and perusal when we finish it all.
I think that's not a bad
assuming
idea.
Assuming we don't, you know, tear the universe apart and leave a massive smoking crater in the last episode or whatever. But
well, we do, believe it or not, we do have backups.
Oh wow, you're very organised. I'm so proud.
I'm well aware of what happens at this point if we lose the data.
About a year's worth of, I'm not doing that again. Yeah, basically it will be a rage quit. So yeah, important to have backups. Yes, so mostly let's talk about Guild Wars 1.
Oh, chronologically.
15, 16 years old or something by now.
200 years old.
200 years old, yeah. Yeah, I guess it was because we were dabbling in Guild Wars 2 anyway, and I just kept looking at that Hall of Monuments and thinking, oh, I still haven't finished that yet. And Guild Wars 1 is, I suppose, a game I've always been extremely fond of and perhaps would call my home. I suppose everyone has an MMO that they've spent quite a lot of time in and their fondest MMO, I suppose. But it has always irritated me that I never really finished that. They added a whole load of ridiculously difficult and all-consuming comprehensive progress bars into Guild Wars back in the day. And we looked at them when they came out and laughed and moved on and got on with our lives. But then, you know, by the time we finished playing like 5 or 6 years of all the campaigns and starting to do hard mode stuff, you start to think, hang on, half of these progress bars are almost complete now.
Wow.
So things like elite skill hunting, the cartography ones where you have to uncover all of the game map by visiting every single place and quite often scraping along the sides of walls to get the map to trigger those last little fragments. That's quite obsessive.
Using Photoshop to overlay a done one with your one so you can
see. Yeah, you can find completed ones that you download, and you get a program called TextMod or UMod, I think it's more recent successor, and that will basically let you swap the fuzzy map texture with effectively a black texture or grey texture or whatever, which then lets you see very easily which are the bits you've missed and which are the bits you haven't. And I suppose, yes, it's cheating, but it's not cheating that Arena Net particularly care about, because you're just modifying a client file and not doing anything to the game itself. So, but yeah, it's such a... I mean, God knows how people managed to actually complete that cartography thing before that kind of cheatery was available, presumably print screen and comparisons or something, or just endlessly scouring far corners of the map and hoping that that's a bit they hadn't got before. Because basically you got the world map in Guild Wars, and that's a big fuzzy sort of colourful picture of the world of Tyria and Ilona and Canthar and so on. And that world map uncovers and becomes high detail when you visit particular areas. And it works on a sort of triangle by triangle basis rather than in modern games where you visit an area, it triggers the waypoint update and the whole area just uncovers.
Yeah.
This actually is a pixel by pixel exploration of the entire of a world, which I think is second place in biggest computer game world only to Fuel. I don't know. I remember seeing some article a long time ago. Anyway, so it's been a labour of a lifetime, an obsession, if you will. And I'm getting quite close to it, actually. I'm 99.2% complete on the one I haven't finished doing yet, so I'm very close to having full cartography, which was, you know, another one of those lifetime goal bucket list things up there with Elite Skill Hunter, which I did as well. There's still more to do. I'm about 32 out of 50 on the track for Hall of Monuments. Of course, after 30, it doesn't give you anything cool in Guild Wars 2. It's just titles beyond there. But it's become a personal thing now, rather than I want the fiery sword skins and that sort of thing in the second game. I mean, in many ways, the second game perhaps for me isn't as compelling as the first. I've come to like Guild Wars 2 again. Talk about that later, but. But Guild Wars 1 has always been, I don't know, a hard sell to the rest of my friends. I'm always sort of constantly hinting in the Tuesday New Club games in Guild Wars 2, you know, that you can get these cool things if you go and play Guild Wars 1, and everyone just goes, and ignores me.
It's because they can't jump.
Yeah, well, that was one of the main problems with Guild Wars 1 was you can't jump, no Z-axis. Of course, Guild Wars 2 has some of the most insane jumping puzzles known to computer gaming in any MMO and quite a lot of normal platformers as well. So they sort of massively overcompensated when they got around to doing the sequel. But yes, it's there's a lot of tricky missions in Guild Wars 1 that we still haven't completed, and some of them are sort of four-player areas, and some of them are six-player areas, and you don't always get the full team of eight. Of course, in Guild Wars 2, you don't get teams at all, but there was a lot of hard mode missions that we sort of struggled through in the first place in normal mode and never really went back to. So the less stuff that's left, the more difficult it's going to get to finish these items off. And I do want to finish them all. I do want to get hard mode completions on every mission and do the vanquish for every explorable area. That's part of the whole thing. So there we came across one, Dunes of Despair, I think. It's the problem with Guild Wars 1's design is that a lot of its missions...
The problem.
Well, one of them, yeah. So you got explorable areas in the normal sense. Of course, everything's instanced. It's just you and your team in there. And then you got missions. And the explorable areas is you just go about exploring the place and reach different outposts. A bit of overland wandering and so on. Very nice. Lots of fighting on the way. But the missions typically have objectives and bonus objectives. And they are separate instances, and you don't have lives or respawns in the missions. So generally, if your party wipes, that's it. You're game over, finished. Often you'll have objectives within these missions as well, which you can't allow to fail, in which case, if that happens, it's back to the outpost start again. So it is really very much a go back and do it all again from scratch. And a lot of these missions can take... They can present you with 20 minutes or so of overland exploration inside this mission, fighting monsters and trash until you get to the big set piece at the end, which is often quite tricky and technical. And if you don't get that right, you have to go all the way back and do the 20 minutes of yard trash again every single attempt, which is, I don't know, you couldn't get away with that in modern game design.
No, you really
couldn't.
Guild
Wars 2 doesn't make you do that much in that sense at all. I mean, there's a couple of jumpy puzzles that make you go right back to the start, but they're generally not whole half-hour endeavours to start from scratch again. Generally, you just bounce straight back up at the nearest waypoint and off you go. There's a real technical challenge to it. It was a bit of this Dunes of Despair one, I think it's called. And it's a six-man mission, so you have to be a bit careful choosing which henchmen you bring along. I think it was me, Malty, and Torag were doing it as well. We're doing this on the Monday nights. And it took us about three or four goes. We were trying to come up with elaborate ways to cheat at it, to trigger things before they're supposed to happen, to sidestep events and stuff. And in the end, we were so bad at cheating, we had to do it properly in the end. So, disappointing.
Did cheating make it worse, or was it just too hard to cheat?
I think the cheating was quite technical and difficult, yeah. So in the end, we just decided to try and do it properly, and we did it properly. So I think there's a couple of goes of warm-up. But it's that whole experience of spending, say, a whole evening doing one 20-minute task over and over until you get it right is quite unusual, quite unknown in this modern sort of MMO world, in many game designs at all, I suppose. So that was really satisfying. I mean, there's quite a few in there that I can think of off the top of my head that we're going to need to have several goes at or run up at or, you know, real practice to get the hang of. Because, you know, I mean, obviously we've completed all the campaigns long time ago, but that was all in normal mode. This is the hard mode version where the monsters typically have another 8 levels on you. You don't get any more levels anyway. and often the objectives will become shorter or longer or whatever as they change slightly. So, yeah, it's just sort of getting in there and really sharpening up our skills and really getting the hang of the basic mechanics of Guild Wars 1 over again, you know. I mean, I've had a bit of a break for a while, but it's back and playing it again. So quite enjoying that. I don't know. They've got to turn it off eventually, but it's long since dropped below the number of players that a sensible game company would stop doing the game at. I mean, typically the best way to find out how the population's doing in there is go to the Embark Beach outpost on American District 1. That seems to be the last bastion of people. And, you know, over midweek, you know, on a Monday night about 8 or so, is there's about perhaps 30 people there. I mean, there'll be lots of people off in their various instances, but no functional way of telling how many. But it's a real sort of... dead again. Well, I haven't said dead. I mean, sunsetting. Well, yeah, but it's taking a very long time to sunset. I mean, it's been in that state, I'd call it, on maintenance. And technically it is on maintenance. There was a maintenance patch for Guild Wars 1 about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So there's still stuff going on. No new content, of course, but they are still fixing bugs and tweaking things with it. I don't know, maybe the ArenaNet give Guild Wars 1 to the intern to do, or the new guy. I don't know, but... So, you know, usually the phrase on maintenance is like a euphemism for just totally being ignored and dead. But in this case, it is literally true. It is they are still keeping an eye on it and fixing the occasional show-stopping bug here and there. So, which, yeah, I can't imagine how or why there'd be show-stopping bugs this far in still. But
well, there's
I can't even remember what the patch notes said, but there was...
There's security patches to libraries they've used and that
I suppose so, yeah, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, so I don't know. We'll keep playing it as long as it's there, I guess, on and off. I can see me making another big push on a variety of progress bars in there, making my Guild Wars 2 Hall of Monuments thing go up. I suppose the Hall of Monuments is about the closest thing I got to a measure of how complete I am in that game, although there's quite a few points on that Hall of Monuments tracker thing that you can only really get by doing the PvP. And even if I was any good at PvP or liked PvP, the scene for PvP in Guild Wars 1's probably quite sparse by now. There'll be a handful of players left doing it, and they're all really, really, really good, I expect. So,
yeah.
So you'd just be have a real hiding to nothing to get anywhere on that. But I don't know. There's alternatives. There's ways to work on those tracks. I'm going to see how far I can go. I'll be surprised. I mean, there are people I've seen wandering around in Guild Wars 2 with the title that comes with getting 50 points on that thing, but they are few and far between. I think it's just quite rare. Actually, it's quite rare seeing people with the various top-end skins you get for 30 points worth. You know?
Well, it depends if people actually want to use them or not as well.
Yes, yeah.
Lots of people could have them and just moved on.
Yeah, yeah. There's better, more proud, more things they're more proud of, I suppose. But yeah, but I'm just astonished it's still going and that we're still playing it. So yeah, Guild Wars 1. That's where it's at, cutting edge. It's good. Over to you.
Okay, I'm going to talk about something which is a bit more cutting edge.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about LEGO Dimensions.
LEGO Dimensions, you're still doing that.
Yes, or more importantly, Season 2 released about a month ago.
There's a lot of LEGO in the studio.
And here. I finally, well, half a month ago, and I finally got around to opening some of it and using some of it.
Right, Season 2, okay. So
for Season 2,
yep.
What they've done, for those who don't know, of course, LEGO Dimensions is LEGO's Toys to Life game.
Mm.
And so what they've done with Season 2 is they've not released a new base game. What they've done is they've released the first of many story packs,
okay.
Which replaces the Lego you put on top of the base,
mm-hmm.
because there's this little scene you have,
yeah,
and also gives you a figure and a model and six new levels of a property.
Okay.
There's one coming for Fantastic Beasts next month, the new Harry Potter book.
Oh, right.
Well, the new Harry Potter list
I'm just
book.
Nodding and thumbs up, yeah. Harry who?
Exactly. Yeah. This one, the one they released at the first, is the Ghostbusters pack.
Okay, yeah.
For the 2016 Ghostbusters remake.
I could tell because all your Lego there's got a big Ghostbusters sign on it.
There is
the
a
top.
Large... It's a really nice little thing. It's got these working
like
doors.
Chinese doors things.
Working doors in the Chinese restaurant they work in.
Ah, right.
Because they can't afford to get the firehouse in current prices.
Right.
It's far too expensive.
Oh, I see.
So they have to work above a Chinese restaurant.
I haven't seen the film. I should probably get around to it.
It's not bad.
I have no opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people didn't want to like it because either they didn't like the idea that it was all women or they didn't like the idea they were needlessly remaking a film.
I think that would probably be my principal objection.
Yeah. And watching it, it is blatantly obvious that the whole thing could have been the third film with very little, one line of dialogue change, and it could have been the third film.
Yeah.
They cover people forgetting stuff in the past.
Wow.
In the film.
Yeah.
And then they have the people having the cameos. You could very easily make them having
forgot.
It is
forgot. All continuity there already.
No, there's no continuity. There's just a setup there that they could have just said, yeah, all of this did happen.
Oh, I see. Oh, well.
So, yeah, it's a needless remake, but it's funny, and the people are all fantastic in it.
Okay.
Except Bill Murray, who is just playing Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Bill Murray.
Mm.
Anyway.
You can have too much of Bill Murray, I think.
Yeah, so for about £30, you get six new levels, which doesn't sound like a lot,
mm-hmm.
but it is quite a lot. You've got hours of gameplay in it. Because, with you know, it's a Lego game, so therefore you've got your levels to play through. Then you've got an open world bit to do lots of tasks in. And then each one of those has lots and lots of things to do. So you'll easily...
It keeps you busy.
You'll easily get, I reckon, 7 or 8 hours worth of content out of this thing.
Plus some Lego.
And also you get some Lego.
Which is not to be sniffed at. That's quite expensive stuff, generally.
Yeah, which is where, as the Toys to Life toys go, it's the only one which has something you might want to play with.
Mm. So the alternatives being, I suppose, your Disney Infinity.
Which is now gone. Disney Infinity was mainly bought by people, who wanted to have a display model of a nice Captain America or a nice...
So,
I'm not thinking of anyone specifically.
More
with
the models
America,
rather than the game, then, particularly.
And Skylanders is just Skylanders, but Skylanders is going really, really quiet in the people talking about it stakes.
Well, who can compete with this? Look at it. It's Lego. It's every IP ever.
Yeah, and, it is and, every IP ever.
Connects up to the PC.
If we just look at the ones...
And of course, the Lego jumping around collecting the studs game format is a winner as well. So.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the first range of ones that come out this year is we've got the Ghostbusters one.
Yep.
We have a Harry Potter set.
Wow, that's still in its box. What have we got in there? Got the car.
Adventure Time.
All right. Oh, Adventure Time. There's a train in that one.
Yeah, no, Harry Potter has Harry Potter, Voldemort, the flying car, and the Hogwarts. Adventure Time, which has got BMO, Jake, Lumpy Space Princess.
I don't even know what Adventure Time is. It's a comic, cartoon thing, something.
And you've also got the one, of course, which has Finn.
Right, good. Good for Adventure Time fans there. Is that the Tom Cruise set?
Oh, there's a Tom Cruise Mission Impossible set. And there's also an A-Team set with BA in it, which, who knows?
Wow.
And coming later, there's a Knight Rider kit set. That's all the sets.
Right. Good. Okay.
I never pile of sets in the
middle. Yeah. Are you going to be one of those tedious people who keeps them in the shrink wrap, tries to sell them in 20 years' time?
Have you met me before?
No. You're not going to be one of those people.
No.
Blimey.
Anyway, yes.
Yeah, that's a lot of Lego.
It is almost exactly the same as last year, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
More of the same, but it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's just lots of more. You buy a thing, you have three different sets of things you can have. You've got, four. You've got the story packs, which are the large ones which have new bits for the base.
Right.
They're the most expensive.
So they're like your base game, I suppose.
Yeah. Then you have level.
Where does the base, the actual gizmo underneath the electronics come from?
That comes from the starter set from year one.
So you still have to go out and buy that if you want to play these story packs.
Yes, you still need to get the base.
There's no more sets that come with... Because there's only one place to get the base then.
Yeah, the original starter, which is still available.
Which is the Doctor Who thing, is it?
No, that's the Lego Movie one.
Oh, okay.
So it's got Batman, Gandalf, and Wildstar.
Ah, which is why they're in all the cutscenes.
Yeah.
I see. Clever.
In the first ones, yeah.
Yes.
So you've got the story packs, you've got a level pack, which is just a level, which is quite a big level. You've got a fun pack and a team pack. These all come with worlds as well that you can go into the big open world bits.
It's a very elaborate range, isn't it?
It is. And none of these have any media on them. Year two, what they've done is you put the thing on the base and then it says go off and download the DLC for it. Which, you know, you've already paid for it because you bought the Lego and it just unlocks.
So the little wiry coil things in the base are effectively the DRM for free downloads, subscription sort of thing.
And you need to have that character. To get into the Simpsons world, you need to have either Homer or Bart.
Okay.
Because they're the only two that's available.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is literally physical DRM.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's some little bits of Lego there, though. Quite a cool little mini
things. Well, the thing about it is it tends to have... exclusive printed bricks, quite rare things, and also just really cool things. Like, you know, you got a Lego Cyberman there. And
that's cool.
Yeah. So just stuff that isn't available elsewhere. So it does appeal to the collector as well, especially the people who are breaking it down for interesting bricks for mocks.
Okay.
I've also gone back and I've started replaying. I never went through and did the get everything playthrough of the first game.
Because
it's a Lego game, you have to do everything so you need all the different people. And now I have all the different people.
That's quite cunning. So the base game has a whole load of puzzles and bits, set pieces you can't do anything with until you've gone out and bought the appropriate figures
to be able to get that ability.
No?
Because somebody tried to start a bit of a controversy.
Yeah.
Because in order to get Supergirl at the moment, who is needed for some of the puzzles, you have to buy the PS4 starter pack at the moment.
Oh, right.
They're bundling that with it. And somebody tried to make a big, oh, look, this is a big conspiracy. They're out to get people. And look, isn't it a big con? Without anyone pointing out, but in-game, you can rent the character you need for 30 seconds.
Okay.
Using in-game currency.
Not even using real-life cash or
money. No, so you're just using studs. So if you need...
Oh, well, that's There's no fuss there at all.
If you need Aquaman to do a bit,
yeah,
you just hit the button. He turns up instantly. You use him to open the thing.
So your score goes down a little bit. He's there for 30 seconds to do the puzzle, and then off you go.
Be honest, this is a Lego game. The moment you get the times two score multiplier, red brick.
There's some insane numbers flashing up on that screen at the various times. Yeah.
So yeah, it doesn't cost much at all. You can get through the entirety of the base game with just three things and 100% it. Mm. You can't get through the DLCs. You can't get through the home of it.
Well, then but you have to buy the DLC to play the DLC. Yeah. Although that's not unreasonable.
Although the base game does go through all of the worlds in it, well, nearly all of the worlds in it.
Yeah,
actually, all of the worlds. So it goes to Springfield. It goes and does another thing.
Okay,
but
so you get little previews, I suppose.
You get a short level. Like there's a portal pack.
Yeah,
and so it just goes through and does a little bit of GLaDOS thing.
Okay, so you can decide if you want to have more of that and go off and get the
relevant
thing.
Then you,
that's not a bad one.
And if you want it, then you go out and buy the portal pack, which comes with Chell with her gun, which is, again, a nice collectible bit of Lego, which a lot of people have bought it for.
Lego portal gun.
A Lego companion cube with the printed bricks, the printed 2x2 flat bricks, which is very nice, and again, very collectible. And then you can just play, and there's a lot of portally type puzzles in Lego.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, it's still fantastic. It gets very expensive if you want to buy everything.
Yeah.
But unlike the others...
You don't really have to buy everything, yeah.
Yeah, you really don't have to buy everything. The only bits you want. And unlike something like Skylanders especially. Skylanders, you could work out at the start of a release, up until a couple of the ones ago when they started doing stupid things with traps and other things. You could say, right, I'm going to need to buy X number of new ones to cover all my bases. And it wouldn't be that many.
Hmm.
It would still be a lot, but it would only be something like 6 or 8 or so. Whereas this, you don't really need to do anything like that.
That's good. Yeah, it's always better to make people want a thing than need it, I think.
But... Yeah, and people just go out and buy it. I mean, I even went out and got the Aquaman one.
Aquaman.
I wanted his hair.
There's all sorts of comic snideness I could do there, but I don't know anything at all about any cartoon stuff.
There's a great line that the characters, when they meet each other in game, when you have them out, have lots and lots of lines, and they've re-recorded some of them for year two, so year one and year two ones can interact.
Okay.
And one of the things Aquaman says, if you've got Scooby-Doo out, is, they're Scooby-Doo Lego.
Scooby-Doo.
I understood that, dog. I'm no longer limited to fish. So no, it's really good. It's still really fun. The level design is still Lego. It doesn't feel as big as, say, the old style standalone Lego games. You know, the Star Wars is and whatnot. Well, I think those are basically going to be dead now anyway.
I can't really see the need for them. Why do you need a whole game about Jurassic Park when you've got a dinosaur and a
especially because you've got the tie-in for the Lego, which works, and especially, you know, this Ghostbusters 2016 figure you get with it is the one that comes in the Ghostbusters main Lego set. So in some cases you just have to repackage an existing brick, existing minifigure, and it's a lot easier for them to write content for an existing game which is designed for it than it is to write a game from scratch.
Yeah, and plus you've got this sort of incremental thing, you know, you're building up the whole thing, which, if you like the whole concept and platform anyway, is a better way to go than, now I have to go and buy a whole new game about a film I'm not particularly interested in.
Yeah, I have to say, with year two, I mean, if you were to, say, start buying second-hand figures off eBay and things just to unlock the various bits, there's a key set of abilities you do need if you don't want to be renting them in-game, but that's a limited set.
Yeah.
And you can figure that out very easily, but you do need one of each IP to get into those worlds. So if you were to pick up one of each of those off of eBay or somewhere, or get them cheap or wherever, or just buy them in sales. Towards the end of last year, these were getting very cheap in sales.
How does the second-hand market work for this then? So you got a little figure with the RFID base thing there. Can you just give that to someone else?
Yep.
They can stand it on their thing? There's no sort of registration or unlocking or binding these things to an account.
The only thing is you've got the figures... And you've also got the builds that come with them, like the Jurassic Park one comes with a Velociraptor and one of those stupid ball things.
Yeah.
And those you have to program after you built them, because they have three different builds which you can upgrade by spending points. You can upgrade those models during the game. And by upgrading them, you have to rebuild the model as well. You don't have to, but you can. And that just writes back what the model is and what level it is.
So some of these pieces are associated with your PlayStation
account? No, they're not associated at all with the PlayStation account. They just basically have two bits of information on them, and that's it.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, anyone could take them and use them.
So, yeah, it's like selling it to other people or indeed just giving it to relatives or whatever. I don't know, yeah.
So yeah, yeah, cool. I'm really enjoying it, and I've got loads of content to get through. Yeah,
I quite enjoy the writing. I was watching you playing some of the. Presumably that was Homer's nuclear plant.
Oh yeah,
you
I was
cavorting around in there.
I was playing that at the start of the original game.
There's some great moments in there. I particularly like the Days Since Fatal Accident sign there. Very good.
Yeah, it's a Lego
great
game.
Gag there.
It's Lego, so it is funny. They do have good writers.
Yeah, yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, Lego. Brilliant.
Excellent. I'm going to talk about Guild Wars 2. So this is the
surprise.
Tuesday Noob Club. Yeah, we're doing the Tuesdays and quite a lot of other days, actually. I seem to have rediscovered my enjoyment of the game. I can't remember really why we burnt out of it the first time around. There was a lot of design decisions at the top end, and we'd reached the end. We'd reached 80, we'd reached the end, and I've never really been one for long-scale repetition of endgame circuit, you know, but... We're back in there now. We've got new characters and stuff. I figured since we were having such a great time and playing quite a bit in there, I thought I might as well go and get the expansion then. So that was £35 digital download.
Yeah.
You can buy it inside the UI, and it's there next time you restart the game, and off you go. So I was looking
it's
at some of
the
I don't know, prestige classes. I can't remember what they're called now. Elite specializations, whatever. Each class at the moment has one available. I think they're all in for every class now. They were dropping them over the course of the last year or two. And so whichever classes you've got, when you get to 80, you can unlock an extra bit, and that will give you an extra weapon to use and a whole new set of abilities and hotkeys and so on. So I was looking at the Mesmer one. Mesmer one is something called a Chronomancer,
ooh,
which is some sort of time magician, and it involves lots of, as far as I can tell, the basic mechanic. I've been playing a little bit of it, and I still can't quite make it click, can't work out quite what it's supposed to be for compared to normal mesmering. So Chronomancer gets a shield. Mesmer doesn't normally get a shield in the offhand. And you're basically doing a lot of stuff involving rewinding time back to an earlier point. So the basic core mechanic there is that your illusions, when you shatter them, you destroy them, and that winds you backwards in time by a certain amount of... Actually, no, when you shatter them, it starts recording, sort of, and then when the record runs out, you teleport back to where you were, and your hit points go back to what they were at the start there as well.
Yeah.
So, I guess, because everyone makes out that Chronomancers are fantastic raid tanks. Yeah, this game has raids now. God knows what that's all about. So, I guess you hit the record button, as it were, just before you're about to go into some horrific pull or take a massive beating, and then when the record runs out and you snap back to where you were, you'll gain all your health back, I suppose. It's that kind of thing. There was a skill very much like it for the Assassin Shadow Step type recall ability in the first game. Perhaps that's where they got the inspiration for all this from. There's lots of AoE fields you put down which will... They count out a certain amount of time, like 6 seconds, and for the first 3 seconds they debuff the enemies, and then at the end of it all they apply the opposite debuff as a buff to all your allies in that field. It's all that kind of thing, and I'm trying to understand it. There's a lot of abilities in there that give a buff called Alacrity, which basically speeds up the cooldown time of all your abilities, and if you can do that in AoE, I guess that's helpful for lots of people in large scale fighting. I've no idea how it works as a proper tanking thing. I'm not sure what you meant to use in your main hand either. I've gone with a sword, but I guess it might work with a scepter and shield. I'm not sure. You get some good defensive abilities you can pop with the shield offhand, 4 and 5 slots. I don't know. Yeah, I have to play it a lot more and try and find out how it's more useful than my usual laser beam two-handed sword blasting type damage build that I normally run around in. I don't know. I mean, it's nice having some shield abilities instead of having to constantly tumble everywhere to stay alive, so perhaps it'll just help me not be quite so frustrated with the game in that regard. Yeah, so also I've got a Guardian at the max level. I managed to get that. It was a second character, an alt I was working on a while back. Now, that one has something called a Dragon Hunter as its elite specialisation. They now get a longbow and the ability to place lots of traps that go off in certain ways and do either debuffs or damage or whatever. I mean, a ranged Guardian is an interesting thing. I've been trying that a bit as well, but trouble is my Guardian's so heavily specced at defending Zergs and teams around me that suddenly switching to a sort of DPS bow type build is quite confusing. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sure. I expect there are established ways to use these roles, and you know, it's easily established what they're for as well. This Heart of Thorns thing is not a new expansion by any stretch. I'm coming late to the party as usual. We got the Warrior. I'm using my Warrior, which is it's my Tuesday character, and I'm about 40s now, about halfway up the levels. So. Going well there.
Yeah.
That seems to be more of a kind of offensive team buff type character, which is good. So I'm just charging around, causing lots of debuffs on the enemy, and then shouts and speeding people up and making them more accurate around me and stuff. Useful for our team knights when we go zerging around the maps. So we did a dungeon. We got to one of the first dungeons, Ascalon Catacombs, story mode. That was a lot easier than I remember it being the first time through. I don't know if they tweaked it all or whether we're just much better at it all nowadays. But that's basically ruined ancient remains of the city of Ascalon from the first game. It's now in Char country, and you go in there and it's full of crazed ghosts of humans that blew themselves up at the end of the sometime just after Guild Wars 1 and before Guild Wars 2. So they're all wandering around as angry ghosts that attack everyone in there. And it's a relatively straightforward sort of place. You got a number of hub rooms with yard trash corridors running between them. I say yard trash, it is all geared at groups. You have these silver border portraits, which are somewhat more difficult than veterans, but not as difficult as champions. And they're there as just yard trash between rooms as well. The bosses are quite tricky in a way, but I mean, I don't know whether we were just overwhelming them or also making clever use of the boulders lying around. But most of these rooms have a couple of boulders lying around you can pick up, and that changes your hotbar. And you can just basically throw these boulders at the boss's heads and they'll instantly knock them down and interrupt them. So if you have a couple of you throwing boulders across the boss at each other, you can keep picking the boulders up and throwing them back across again. And you can sort of more or less stun lock some of these bosses with careful use of throwing heavy masonry around. I mean, forget your own skill bar. I don't know where the rocks are in there so that you can get by using this alternative strategy in case you accidentally end up in a pickup group full of five warriors who've all got the wrong abilities, that sort of thing. I mean, there doesn't really seem to... I've never really understood how the Trinity gameplay works in that game. Apparently it's somewhat necessary when you get to the raiding top end, and this is where these elite specializations are perhaps starting to mirror classes that are more akin to normal MMOs, tank healers, DPS and so on. Pretty much every normal class in that game is a self-healing DPS with some sort of mitigation, either by dodging or evading or just soaking it up. So you don't really have the normal group gameplay. It is a game, in theory, where five players can just go into a dungeon and do it, you know. And they have to just make sure they take care of their own healing, keep, you know, rotate aggro round as needed,
yeah.
That sort of thing. It's a different way of doing things, I suppose, but we'll get the hang of it. So we've done that one. So the next one up is Caduceus's Manor, I think, and that's another dungeon with I think it's a sort of dinner party, soiree, garden party that goes drastically awry, and it's necessitating five adventurers in full gear. So we're looking forward to trying that. We did a jumpy puzzle this week.
Ooh.
I know, it's a mixed
brave.
Mixed reaction. We got quite a large group of diverse gaming interests, and some of them are quite rightly not interested in jumpy puzzles whatsoever, but that's fine because I switched across and got my Mesmer. Mesmer has an ability called Portal Exuent and Portal Entree. Basically, it's a flip skill. So you go to a place as a Mesmer, you cast a thing, it puts a big shimmering purple pool on the floor for the next 60 seconds. Then you run around, do your jumpy puzzle, whatever. Then you place your next... You use the flip skill, which puts another portal on the floor. And if you stand in the middle and press F, you instantaneously teleport from one to the other. So if you've got a friendly Mesmer who's quite good at jumping on the team, the Mesmer goes and does the jumpy puzzle, puts a portal at the top, and then jumps down to the bottom and puts the portal on the ground. And then people who are jumpertaneously advantagely challenged... Is that even a word? I don't know.
It is now.
I don't know. But yes, people who can't jump, then just stand at the bottom near the nearest drop-off from the exit. Because most of these jumpy puzzles have a very simple exit where you just drop down a bit and you're out and there you go. You know, it's just a wall that's slightly too tall to jump normally, and then you just jump off and away you go. So you just set up there with your Mesmer and connect a point-to-point portal from the top to the bottom of that, and anyone can get to the box at the end and tick off the achievement, which is cheating, of course, but life's too short to be learning to do jumpy puzzles if you hate them, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, we did one in Caledon Forest. It was inside this giant volcano full of Azura technology, and it was a series of floating energy platforms that circle the core of this volcano, and they appear in sequences, and you have to turn on the control panel next to the start of a section, and the platforms materialize and then stay there for about 30 seconds and then disappear. So you have to get to each sort of waypoint, hit the control panel, do the next section of jumpy puzzle quite quickly, and land on the next waypoint, activate the next panel and do the next section and so on. And this was actually quite a forgiving one, because if you jump off and fall down into the middle, there's a bunch of little floating golems there who will teleport you up to the last waypoint that you got to, so you don't have to do the whole thing again from scratch. You just have to do each section, you know, and then advance that way. So, you know, a little bit forgiving, but then this is one of the starter zones. Some of the ones near the end get absolutely insane. So I'm surprised how many people really threw themselves into it and had a good old go. Quite a few people actually made it as well, which is good. So encourage discouraging, but I don't mind, you know, mesmering it up and helping people get up if they're not up for the jumping. That's fine too. It's a strange skill. A strange set of life skills that you sort of have to cultivate. And of course, every different game that has jumping in does it slightly differently. The physics model, the jump engine or whatever you call it, is always slightly different. Slightly, it feels a little bit different to everything else. So they're sort of transferable skills, but not precisely transferable skills. And in a way, I suspect that if you absolutely master Guild Wars 2 jumping, you're going to make yourself much worse at jumping in other games, because suddenly you're really drilling in those specific timings and reflexes. I don't know. It's an odd thing. They really dig their jumping puzzles in that game. And they are worth it, though. You get a vast amount of cool loot and XP for getting to the top of them as well. There's usually a chest at the top end that's got, you know, some really worthwhile gear in it. So worth putting the time and the effort in. And achievements, of course. Game's full of those. So, yeah, we are still playing on the Tuesdays. I think we're getting to about sort of 30 to 40 level now. There's a couple of people behind, a couple of people ahead. It's quite a few people who've just brought their old level 80 characters along from last time. Perhaps they didn't finish up in quite such a comprehensive fashion last time around, so it's a good opportunity to tick off world completion. Because you can get to 80 without doing everything by any stretch. I've been looking at masteries as well. This is a Heart of Thorns thing. This is your sort of post-80 content. So when you get to 80, your XP bar then starts to, it finishes basically until you get to Heart of Thorns. And Heart of Thorns comes with a whole bunch of masteries, which essentially let you, it's sort of a bit like the faction system from Star Trek Online, where you have all sorts of different XP bars you can plough your ongoing XP into. And these work towards different sorts of masteries. The first one that you get and unlock is a gliding mastery. And I quite like that. That's basically, if you're jumping off a thing, if you double jump while in the air, suddenly a pair of wings flack out from your backpack and you can actually glide quite far. And you can use that to, I mean, yeah, okay, there's a lot of world design in the new bit that you need gliding to get around. But it also works in the old world as well, which is something I was quite surprised at. Normally these kinds of, hey, look, we've added flying, but you can't fly in any of the bit that you were in before because our world doesn't have any lids on anything, you know. Well, obviously they've designed it a bit better than that, but they actually allow you to use your glider interior as well in the normal world, which is nice. I think it's specifically disabled for some of the jumpy puzzle areas because it would absolutely ruin and cheat them, but on the whole, if you're in danger, and there is a lot of falling off very high things and dying in this game, so with the ability to glide on demand, it has a timer as well, a charge down bar, so the wings will disappear after a certain amount of time as well, which is a shame, because I was remembering Firefall, I think, specifically, you had sort of rocket glide things there as well. You sort of jump off pads and glide. And one of the achievements was to be able to, on one of the maps, to try and glide more than about 10 kilometres or something like that. And you could do it as well. But it took, you find a really high thing and jump off it with the glider. And then and next, you know, sort of 25 minutes later, you're still zooming around, going in circles and coming back again, you know, trying to get straight line distance. But so you could, this gliding, presumably you can carry on ranking up the gliding mastery and gain additional abilities and perks with it. So there's a lot of things to do after 80. Then none of it seems to be the traditional gain more hit points, gain more attack ability, that kind of stat gain. It's not really leveling in the same sense. It very much feels to me like an alternative advancement system. There's all sorts of side perks and things you can do. Yeah. Some of it you can only earn XP towards while you're in the new bit and locks specific, I mean the gliding's one of those. You can only buy the mastery points when in the right part of the world, and some of that applies to the old world. One of them's a mentor tag. I've seen this on lot players. You can see them on the world map in the zone you're in, with the little red symbol above their heads on the map. So, I mean, typically that was a mechanic from World v World. If you paid up about 100 gold, which is a pretty high amount in that game, not trivial at all, you could buy a thing which just made you appear on the world map as a sort of coloured symbol, which is useful for coordinating zergs and stuff in World v World. I don't know, is it? It's perhaps useful in the PvE stuff as well. Find out where all the big events are going on. If there's two or more of these mentor tags near each other, odds are something interesting's going on.
I'm going to say, use that to screw with people.
Yeah, it's one of the very early ones to unlock as well, by the looks of it. So I might get it myself just to help. We have some quite directionally challenged people on the Tuesdays. It's quite tricky getting them all in one place. You can see all the members of your guild on the map as yellow dots, though, generally. So it's just trying to sort of get those yellow dots to become visible. Look, no, the snowy land on the left, up, you know, that kind of, let's all go to this place. Because there's a lot of world events that go on in that game, and you can basically find them on a wiki, on a website, which actually tells you the timings of when they're all going to happen. And there are consistent objective times for it. It's not all just, are you nearby, we'll trigger one. They go at certain times of the day, every 2 hours or so. And you can sort of work your way around the sort of circuit of these by pinging to the various world waypoints as you go. So one of the early things we've been trying to do is make sure everyone's got those kinds of waypoints unlocked so we can start travelling around it very quickly and doing these massive set piece boss fights that happen out in the world. Yeah. And they're very spectacular and quite satisfying. I quite enjoy doing them. Obviously, it's not something you want to do, you know, for hours and hours every week. It becomes a grind like any other. But it's nice to have that kind of mobility. But getting everyone to the right places can be tricky sometimes. But worth the effort, definitely. So I've sort of opened up. I'd found Silver Wastes and Dry Top, which were the two newish 80 zones. That they put in a while back. Apparently there's a Ring of Fire now, the whole set of zones there. I haven't even found out how to get there yet. Presumably there's some people you talk to and a quest you do. I'm so far behind. I'm still exploring all this Heart of Thorns stuff. But I found a place called the Verdant Brink, which is full of all sorts of new and wondrous mastery points to be found, and all sorts of ongoing battles with packed resupply points and trying to get NPCs and supplies going and so on. Lots of questing. There's plenty to do in there. Plenty to do when you get to 80, interestingly. Obviously, yeah, stump up for the expansion. To be honest, I don't even think you can buy not expansion anymore. I think they only sell the whole thing as its own thing. And I remember there was quite a lot of fuss back when they did Heart of Thorns, because when they put Heart of Thorns on sale, the package was and get Guild Wars 2 free. So yeah. It effectively wasn't an expansion. It was just an alternative version of the base game, but with a whole load of extra stuff in for free. And so everyone who had already been enjoying two or more years of Guild Wars 2 kicked up a big old fuss. Ooh, we had to pay extra. Well, yeah, but you've had 2 years of game. These people who are joining now haven't. And who wants to join a game? This is the death of an MMO, is when sort of 5 years down the line it costs you £150 to get up to speed with where everyone else is.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, which is typically why when EverQuest 1 and 2 went and all free to play, they basically just start giving away every expansion except the last most recent 2 or 3, you know.
Yeah, people just aren't going to touch.
No one is, well, exactly, no one's going to start up on EverQuest 2 and go, right, okay, what do I need to get competitive? Oh, how many expansions? Right, and you know, each of them at £30 a go or whatever. Yeah, it becomes utterly insane proposition. So you know, and the companies who do this stuff understand that, so no, give it away. Keep people paying only for the most recent thing at any given time. That's the way to do it. And yeah, and the people who feel like they've been cheated because they, you know, they've had to pay an extra £30 because they didn't wait till the expansion came out before they started playing. Well, you've had, you know, 2 or 3 years of playing a game you presumably enjoyed. And, you know, this being Guild Wars, you pay once and don't pay again. Unless you want to do gems and stuff in the cash shop in Guild Wars 2. But in general, it's that was the big pioneering thing with Guild Wars 1 back in the day. Is you buy the box and you can play an MMO for free forever. And that was an amazing thing back then, because back then it was all subscription MMOs only. So, you know, the idea you could play an MMO, and yeah, okay, is Guild Wars an MMO, blah blah blah, but yeah, so, and that now, you know, fast forward to today and pretty much everyone does that kind of model these days. Only back in the day Arena that didn't quite understand about cash shops and gems things properly back then, but there you go. But yeah, so still playing Guild Wars 2. I think there's it seems to have a good bit of momentum to it. I'm looking forward to when we get the whole team up to 80, because at the moment, that's about the only restriction we're having at the moment. In terms of group size, well, if you're doing overland events and zerging around doing hearts and stuff, doesn't matter if you're even in a group or not. You're all there, you're all chipping in, it's all great. In terms of roles, it doesn't really have a trinity as such, and certainly in PvE, overland PvE questing and stuff, just the concept of tanking and healing isn't even necessary anyway. It's all DPS zerg racing all the way around, or it's more complex positional mechanics, in which case it doesn't matter what role you are either anyway. And in terms of levels, well, yeah, you, wherever you go in the world, you are leveled down to match the place you're in, which is fine, but it doesn't level people up. So the only restriction we're having at the moment is we're trying to, you know, we have to go where people can get to in terms of what the effort they put in. So but that'll get easier, obviously, as we go on. And it's really not difficult to max level characters in that game anymore. I mean, I remember I'm sort of reading around on topic and hearing tales of how people managed to get their rangers up to druid specializations unlocked in about two or three sessions, you know, from start. So, and there's all sorts of scrolls being given out for, you know, jump a character to level 20 or 30 or 40. I can't remember where they come from, to be honest. I think they might be birthday presents or something, but there's a lot of ways to race the XP up if you're in a hurry to get to the end. But you sort of end up going backwards to do a lot of stuff you missed and being de-leveled anyway. So.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if we can all sort of get to the same places and do the same things, but we can. There's lots of stuff we've missed and stuff we can go back to and enjoy anyway. So it's all good. It's a very flexible system in terms of guilds and stuff. Heart of Thorns comes with a guild hall type thing. I don't even really know what that's involved. We have to have a look at that. We'll decide whether we need one. I'm very dubious about guild halls generally, what purpose they serve. I suppose if you're in one of these massive hundreds of people, we spam guild invites into general chat and invite anyone you like, then perhaps they serve a useful function as a kind of social hub. But if you're just a small group of friends, which typically the guilds that I form or join tend to be, you don't really need a special place to go and be and do that. You just go out and play together, you know? Mumble is our guild hall, you know, so the idea of having a physical avatar space inside an MMO is perhaps not as important as it could be. Don't know. But yeah, still ticking along with that, enjoying it a lot. And it's good to just have the weekly MMO thing on the go again, you know, no matter what the title is. It's something we haven't really been doing for a lot for summer, so enjoying.
Definitely.
Over to you.
Okay, I'm going to talk about another game I've been playing, which is... I hate to say it, but a mobile phone game.
Mobile phone game?
Yeah.
Oh.
And a Star Wars mobile phone game at that.
Oh, crikey.
It's called Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, and bear with me.
Star Wars Galaxies, did you say? won an episode. Go on you go.
Yeah.
Galaxy of Heroes.
Yes, sorry, I'm just wondering if you need to put trigger warnings at the start of this for Star Wars Galaxies players.
Again.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Galaxy of Heroes. What it is a squad-based combat game.
Hmm.
Okay. Where you collect the characters, level them up, and fight them.
I've seen a lot of that kind of thing on the old Google Play Store.
Yeah, there's an awful lot about it, and it doesn't do anything spectacularly new, but what it does do is okay. And by okay, I mean it's quite solid and quite interesting, and you don't really feel the need to have to pay, and is quite good.
Mm, okay.
So what this is, basically, is one of those games where you have a large roster of characters.
Yep.
And you have to collect them.
Mm.
So you need to collect 5 of each side to get a full squad. So 5 light side, 5 dark side. You need to get those as early as you can in the start of the game. That's the bit where actually you might want to pay.
Mm.
Unfortunately, there's an offer you get for a couple of quid at the start. You know, it's that usual.
There's a very prescribed script involved in this kind of thing.
Here you go. Just get over that experience of get used to paying.
Yeah. Here, we're going to give you some free gem currency. Now, use the free gem currency in our shop to get a thing. Wasn't that fun? Okay.
I never do.
In those games, I
always keep mine.
No, well, a lot of these games that I've tried, they make you spend the points they've given you just to progress. So you have to soil yourself with the whole commerciality of it.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a game where, trust me, you don't have to pay. You can just get the people normally. Because you basically to get a person, you need to get X number of shards to open them.
Right.
So basically, you need to get character flakes.
Yeah.
So it'll take, say, 10 flakes to get a really not very good character, but 80 flakes to get a really good character.
Mm.
And some of the missions you can do will give you character flakes. And so within not too long, you can...
These missions have a cooldown, do they?
Funny you should mention that. But
do you have a vitality score that goes down every time you try a mission?
You have energies. You have several energy things. But the thing I've discovered is once you get past that uncomfortable first bit, there's enough going on and enough things to do to mean that you can play for half an hour a day, no problem. And
yeah, but I imagine that's probably thought of as well. Once you get past that uncomfortable first bit, you've proven that you're not really one of their target customers anyway, and so, all right, whatever, go do what you like.
That's probably true.
Yeah, don't waste any time trying to sell to these people over and over, because you're just going to irritate them and they'll go to the forums and make a big fuss. Let them carry on playing. You want to be keep getting the people who are easily irritated and with lots of spare money and not much common sense at the early stage. Oh, God, I'm going into a cynical implosion.
If you're one of those people, do not play this game.
Well, you know what you're getting. These games are all very similar in the kind of underlying bones of it all, but I suppose it's the specific implementation, the level of QA applied to the project, and the sort of quirks and IP that come with it. I mean, is this being a Star Wars game improving it for you? Or is it not really?
It being a Star Wars game is one of those things that really does help, because it's collecting characters.
Yeah. We've seen the game itself before in other forms,
yeah,
I suppose.
But the game itself, actually, talk about the actual game itself. It's combat with abilities.
Okay.
So you've got a squad of five, yeah, and depending on what you're doing, you might be just going through the light side or the dark side battles, which is just a straight set of do these fights. They go up in difficulties as you go along. So you start off with a team, then you'll start trying to get more flakes of characters, more shards to...
flake.
Yeah. If you get... you can level up. The same mechanism you use for getting the character is the one you use for leveling them up as well in the number of stars they get.
Yeah.
Which...
Do certain characters need particular sorts of resources that can only be found in certain sorts of fight? Or is it all just currency to power everyone up?
With the flakes, the way it works is some fights will give you them as rewards. Yeah. And it will say, this fight may drop Chewbacca flakes.
Okay. Oh, each character has a specific flake that can only be used on them.
Some characters are very easy to get hold of because... there are lots and lots of different missions you can run on them, and you can just level them up really fast. Well, considerably faster than you could do if you were not. There's no really fast in this game because it's really not designed for you to play for hours at a time.
No, it's designed for you to play a couple of minutes, but for a very long time.
Yeah. Also, the other thing I like about it is the pay to win is random, so it puts you off using it because if you want to get shards, you will buy either a blind pack, which may have loads of people you don't care about, or one which is a bit more focused to the characters you like, which again may be all the people you don't care about. So it really puts you off spending money on these things.
Mm. Well, I think there's a certain mindset you bring to these games anyway. Do you spend money on any of these games?
No, I do. I give them a bit, but I tend not to buy the game,
but it decides that, oh, you've given us money. Well, you'll obviously give us more money.
I tend to give a bit of money up until the point where I think I've paid for the game and then stop.
Yes. So you set your own bounds.
Yeah.
And
I had this weird, I'm actually going to give you some money because I'm actually enjoying this, but I'm not going to give you an infinite amount of money, so don't even bother asking for that.
Absolutely. Not a whale.
Yeah, also you've got... so there's two ways to level up a character. You've got the stars by getting the character shavings, and you've got the gear level, which basically changes the rarity colour line. So it goes up to purple and whatnot, which you do from getting gear, and each character has 6 gear slots. Each fight you do, you'll get a bunch of different bits of gear, and then you have to get the right bits of gear to...
There's quite a lot of theory craft and build craft involved.
The interesting thing is once you get more than a couple of characters, which you will have, that will just happen, you will get the odd random character given you for free, and you'll just unlock
stuff.
8
different sorts of stormtrooper, each with a slightly different helmet.
I'm trying to get all the clone troopers at the moment. Uh-huh. Yeah, and then you start to come to the actually building the team part, the team builder part, where you've got the synergies of which characters work together. Do you want a full Jedi team, or do you want to have a team which is based on a heavy tank with healing?
Mm-hmm.
You've got tanks, you've got healers, you've got obvious DPSs, AOE, that's all those things you'd expect.
Yeah.
And this is where you get into where the... PvP side of it is,
oh god,
which is you fight on this civil squad arena thing, and it will use other people's squad that they've used on the arena against you. So you'll be at one level on it, and it'll give you a bunch of people above you and their squads. It gives you a choice of 3, then you pick the one and you fight against them. So they'll have worked out a team that works for them. You have team, then the AI will play them.
So not direct PvP, it's more of a sort of driver tar type of thing, I suppose.
Yeah, and you're basically working up the ladder that way.
Okay.
Which is quite interesting. Yeah. Depending on how good you are, if you actually understand what you're doing, you can decimate your way up the ladder very quickly.
Well, it sounds like everyone's designing to beat the people above them, not understanding that you've got to also be able to defend against the people below you.
There's a bit of that, yeah.
Mm.
Then there's stuff like there's the Galactic Wall, all the stuff unlocks after a while, which is just a daily thing you can do, which has lots and lots and lots of fights going on, which get harder to go along. That takes no energy. You just get all those fights every day.
All right. See, that's the thing. As long as there's something you can do to actually play the game.
Or challenges. I mean, we're recording this on a Sunday, so every challenge is open. Some are open on different days. You can run them 3 or 5 times a day, depending on the one. And that'll be one stuff like, in order to do this one, which gives you this type of gear, you know, which will be just rewards of this type of gear at this level, because you know, if you want it, it's easier to find it that way. Yeah. And it'll be stuff like all tanks or all healers or only characters under 5 foot, that kind of thing.
Right.
So it does pay to keep an eye on all your characters you get and trying to get teams. And yeah, when you start, you're not going to have enough characters, so it gets hard. But it's quite within days you can unlock characters using the various different currency systems, which not the paid for currencies, just the different currency systems and the different bits of the game.
But presumably you can buy Darth Vader on day one if you want.
No. Darth Vader comes by getting his Darth Vader flakes, which are only attached to achievements up until the point you get high up. So you complete achievements in the game to get the Darth Vader, which is interesting.
Yeah, so a large sort of collection gameplay.
Yeah, large collection gameplay. And the thing that's kept me playing is the fact that the actual combat is interesting. They've managed.
That's got to be it, Why are you collecting this stuff otherwise?
They've made a game where the minute-to-minute playing of it is fun and is interesting, and I can't fault the design of the game. It's not overly monetized, but it is monetized, so you can ignore
everything
that.
Everything is these days,
But you never get to the point where you think, I can't progress because I don't have enough money, or I can't progress because I don't have enough skill, or I can't progress because I don't have enough stuff, because you just know that very soon you'll have all those things.
Yeah.
I mean,
perseverance, I suppose.
Yeah. At the moment, there's
Can you substantially lose or go backwards in any fashion?
No. No, there's no going Fair backwards. The only
I think of a game that does let you do that these days.
The only thing you can do is be at a standstill because you are just upgrading characters who aren't in your main squad.
Yeah.
So
building up B teams and so on, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Because if you consider, say, you know, I've got my light side squad, which is basically a bunch of Jedi and Chewbacca. Then I got my dark
nondescript side. Blokes with helmets from the cruiser at the start.
No, it's all named Jedi.
Okay, fair enough.
Then you've got my dark side squad, which is a random selection of dark side people because I haven't really concentrated on getting any of them. So you know, you've got General Veers, a couple of Genosians.
It's just weird. Trek timelines thing, just weird characters who've never met in any context appearing in the same squad.
There's absolutely no planning in my dark side squad at the moment, although I've nearly got Vader, in which case I'm going to be happy. And then you've got stuff like, you know, then you have the one which needs the neutral ones, and so it's a different selection of people, or it might be able to take everyone, like the squad arena, which is you just your top 5 characters.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, not so much your top 5 as the 5 characters you want, but for the most part, it's going to be your top 5 until the point when you realise that slightly weaker character is better than that slightly more powerful character because of the abilities play off their abilities better.
Okay, so that's unreasonably elaborate.
It is. There's enough stats, there's enough score, numbers and theory craft in there to keep you interested for a while and to keep you going. And it's definitely... It's worth playing from a game design point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth playing from a I like Star Wars point of view. And it's also worth playing from a this combat's quite interesting point of view.
Yeah.
The only thing against it is the fact that it can be a little bit over the top on trying to ask you for money. Occasionally it will say, oh, look, there's this pack in the shop. Then you look at it and say, 70 quid, no chance.
Yeah, that kind of thing can drive me right out of these games and often does. So. Or, this is why I have such bad success with finding phone games I like. They'll get my wick somehow.
Or, here's the game. Pass it to Tim. Have a look at what the best value one is.
Best value? Spend £150.
150 quid.
And you've got to hurry up. You've only got 15 days.
Yeah. I remember when it used to be 80 quid as the top tier, and we thought that was a lot. But it's now a lot
more. Still insane. Yeah. Well, I suppose, I mean, it always says best value, and I suppose economies of scale do work like that, if you found yourself needing 200 million crystals. Yeah, best buy them in one go rather than 10 at a time. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, best value. Ugh. Anyway, good.
Yeah, so no, I do recommend it. It's quite interesting. It's available on Android and iOS, published by EA, of course, because it's Star Wars and they have the exclusive rights.
Yeah.
And currently there's a Yoda event going on, which you can only really get Yoda in if you have maxed out everything. So don't really
I'm sold. About it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and they keep adding new stuff. They've got each month they have a daily login thing. And if you log in enough, each day you get new bits. And if you log in enough, you'll get a whole new character. At the moment, it's... I forget what the one is. Last month, it was one of the ones from Rogue One. This month, I think it's a First Order TIE pilot. So just...
Does that really help, the daily login thing? And Guild Wars 2 does it as well. There's a big old track. You log in 30 days in a row and you get some load of cool stuff. You get cool stuff every day if you log in too. And you think, well, okay, that's great. So look, your concurrent daily users count is way up through the roof. But none of these people care and they're not actually playing your thing and they're just logging in and consuming bandwidth and stuff. I don't know. I don't know what constitutes as a genuine and successful login. You know, well, someone who's played it for at least an hour in a day. Does that count?
I think just getting people in is enough.
They tick the box and then they immediately leave and don't come back because they're playing something else they're actually enjoying elsewhere. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the value of it all is. It's purely an accountancy trick thing, isn't it? Look at how many concurrent users we had today. I don't know.
Yeah, but it gets people in. They may want to actually think, I can just play a couple of missions and do stuff.
I guess.
So, yeah, in this sort of thing, it works a lot better than in, say, Guild Wars or in any of the other things.
Yeah, if you're only going to be spending a few minutes playing a thing anyway. Yeah.
Well, it's like the one that really gets me is Forza. In the Forza Hub, you get extra points on that big leaderboard thing, which gives you payouts in-game for a number of days played on all these games. And, you know, 50 days played. Okay, I'm not sure I ever will play any of the Forza games for 50 days.
Concurrently, yeah, yeah.
No, not concurrently. Just for 50 days.
Oh, any 50 days, not in a straight line.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Because, you know, by before 50, I have pretty much done everything.
It'd be interesting to see who gets that achievement. That'd be an interesting metric we could dredge out and see who gets bored of games and how quickly.
It's not tied to an achievement, unfortunately. It's tied to score in the thing, and it's not properly tracked. But, you know, if you're playing the multiplayer, yeah, that's going to happen. But if you don't care about the multiplayer, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
So I think in that case, you probably do get people, when it's not broken, just logging in every day, doing a run through all the Forza games.
It becomes a compulsion. You sort of have this sort of, oh, God, opportunity cost type thing going on where if you don't log in I might not get a free thing, so you find yourself sort of trapped. And well, I wouldn't say I do. I mean, sometimes I just think screw it and don't bother logging in. Literally, it's click on a desktop icon, put the password, log in and then pick a character and I'll get some free stuff. How little effort is that? But it becomes almost a kind of reactionary thing. I think, well, no, I'm going to deliberately not log in today because I don't care about your free stuff and I'll do what I want.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. So overanalyzing as usual.
Yeah, anyway.
So, Star Wars Galaxies, very good.
Galaxy Heroes. Galaxy Heroes. It is actually fun. If you don't like iPhone games, you probably won't like it. But
so it's a very representative, but a good implementation.
Yeah, a very good implementation of that kind of game.
Fair enough. All right, well, I'm all talked out.
Yeah.
Do your spiel.
So if you go along to YouTube, you can like and subscribe, and that will give you various things. Liking is actually useful. Subscribing is very useful. Recommending us to your friends is very useful. Even if you subscribe and don't actually watch it, that's useful because it makes our numbers go up. And that gives me this warm, warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yes. Yeah, it's a bit like that daily login thing. We need you to daily log in to our podcast, and we'll give you like bonus faction points.
Most people don't actually watch the video. Whatever. Most people listen to the audio. It's an order of magnitude more people who watch the listen to the video than listen to the audio than watch the video. So if,
sort of one of them.
Yeah. So if you want to, don't feel the need. You have to go watch the video, but please watch the video. I put literally minutes of work into it.
Yeah, it's disrespectful not to.
You don't even have to watch it. Just start playing.
just get on with
away.
It.
You can go on to howtomurdertime.com where you can find the actual podcast feed and all our previous episodes. And you can also find links to all of our other things we do and have done. Also, watch our Regrowth series because in the episode 70-something is a great place to start.
Some year soon we're going to finish that.
We are. I reckon the series may take a whole year.
God, blimey.
What are we going to play next?
I don't know. Suggestions and comments.
Yeah, what do you want us to play next? Would you? Yeah, yeah. We need a game that will make us play for months and months. So, yeah, suggestions, please. And join us next week when we're going to be talking about something which isn't what we've been playing, probably.
So with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.